Well, good to be here. I'll go ahead and say to all of you, I'm not feeling well, so I don't, afterwards, when you try and shake my hand, I don't have to do this 20 times today. Not feeling good. So I have a bit of a cold, don't want to pass it on, so I want to keep safe distance out of respect for you today. But looking forward to meeting all of you. For this time, I think this will be maybe most helpful, maybe more exciting, more fun, if we engage each other and you have questions. So I'll share a little bit about who I am, what we're doing, and then any questions that you guys have. I know you heard from Jameson last week,
yeah,
is that right?
Two weeks ago?
Okay, so you might have some questions on what are some of the differences in the campuses and nature of our ministries. He's, I think, finishing his sixth year, so we're kind of in different places ministry-wise. But a little bit about me. The reason we wanted to do this, L.A. kind of came out of nowhere, but the reason we wanted to do campus ministry right out of seminary, I went to seminary in Florida at Reformed Theological Seminary and did a divinity and a counseling master's there. And we wanted to do campus ministry, at least for a period of time. Time will tell if we're lifers or not, but I think we'll eventually end up transitioning into working full-time in the church. But we wanted to do campus ministry because both my wife, Tiffany, and I had such formative experiences in college. We both went into college as Christians, at least nominally so, and it was in college, really, it was during those 4 years that grace was presented to us for the first time. I came from a background where we really had to work hard to perform and to feel like we could be a part of the community, the church that I was a part of. It was kind of hyper-spiritualism and legalism and terribly exhausting. And so to get to college and really hear for the first time, truly, of the grace of Christ kind of changed everything. And so not only personally but vocationally, that was when I really realized that this was something I wanted to do with my life and felt called to do. And so, you know, we couldn't resist the opportunity to spend some time meeting with college students and teaching the Bible, teaching the gospel in all places in the Bible, and teaching grace, and trying to get our students to see, and this is what I've been attempting to do for the past 2 years, and what I'll continue to do, is get our students to see that though we are a Christian ministry, we're a ministry for any kind of student at UCLA because we're all in need of grace. No one has it all together. And so we want to welcome students wherever they are in the process, skeptical, angry, jaded, fully on board. We want RUF to be a place where any of them can come and be a part and can grow, whether they've been a Christian for 10 years, whether they're just now starting to wonder whether or not they could ever even believe these things. We're inviting them in. So we want to be a ministry of grace at UCLA, and that's one of, I'll say, a couple of things that really get me excited about my job, what I get to do. There's a lot that I could say about RUF, and as you have questions, we can talk about it, but I'll just kind of focus on a few things that really make me excited to get up in the morning and do what God's given me permission and grace to do. And one is that we are a ministry of grace, that I want our ministry to be a place where students can walk in and breathe a sigh of relief, that God is good, that Christ is sufficient. Talk about Christ and all that we do. We did Jonah this past spring quarter, and my goal was to get them to see Jesus and wherever we are in the Bible. And the second thing that I think gets me thrilled to do what I get to do in RUF is we're a ministry of service. that we want our students to begin to get a passion and excitement for serving, not only on the campus, but in the community. So RUF is a ministry on the campus for the campus. Right when I got there, one of the first things we did was a service project, painting a house in Compton through the Compton Initiative, which is a big kind of mobilization of serving. And so wanting to get the students to grasp this heart of God, that God is a heart, God is a God of service. God is a God who humbly serves. Jesus said, "I came not to be served, but to serve, even to give up my life as a ransom." And so we worship a God who is a God who came and served us, continues to serve us as He pursues us by His Spirit. And so wanting the students to kind of grasp that and get excited about that, that we're a ministry that longs to serve and to show the love of God to the campus, to the city in which we dwell. And then the third thing I'd say is what gets me excited to get up in the morning and do what I'm doing is we have a pretty lofty vision, goal for the future. We want to be not only a ministry where students come and grow in grace in Christ, but a ministry where students come and are introduced to Christ for the first time, come to know Him for the first time. Not only these things, not only a ministry where we are outwardly engaged and serving in the world, but really our vision is nothing short of in 5, 10 years, whenever, that this ministry will have grown and thrived in such a way that if it were to disappear, students, administrators, professors would have to say, we are worse off at UCLA with RUF not here. Those students had humility, they had integrity in their studies, they loved others, they were selfless, they served us here on the campus. We are worse off to not have them. And so that's what I think of when I think of the future, where we're going. Is that we're a ministry that is Christ-centered, but also pouring out to the campus, loving the university, establishing a real, thriving, grace-filled presence on the campus. Now, again, there's tons I could say about what RUF is, what our philosophy of ministry is, the way we teach, the way we're structured. And I'll say a little bit about our structure. Jameson might have covered some of this. But RUF basically has three main avenues of how we minister to students. Large group, small groups, and one-on-ones. When I showed up, obviously we did not have large group format. We had me on the campus with flyers trying to meet students, trying to gather students. And we started a Bible study. So we had one small group. Eventually that moved to two small groups. This year we grew to having a large group format on Thursday nights with three other small groups meeting throughout the week, a guys small group, a girls small group, and a grad student Bible study in addition to our large group, and then meeting one-on-one with students as often as they'll let me, as I try and chase them down. So that's kind of what we do. I'm sure I've missed. I'm sure you have some questions, and I didn't address them. So, any questions from you guys on campus or what we're doing? Yes, sir.
Was it Jim the campus UCSB?
Jameson.
And it was brought out that you guys are ordained ministers, and I'm sensing, you know, like with banks, we had a notion that a church is brick and mortar, you know? And like the first time I saw Wells Fargo at Vaughn's, I'm like, this is new. But it's a full service Wells Fargo bank.
Yeah.
In the store, and that's what I'm getting the impression that your ministry is actually an arm of the church at the campus.
That's correct. That is one of the, there are a few things that make us a distinct, unique ministry at UCLA.
The two of us, there.
What's that?
You're of us.
Right. Yeah. You have two campus ministries, yeah, a part of your church. One at UCSB and one at UCLA.
You know,
because
yeah, I like using the word ministry, and then I've heard the word church, and the word church seems to be associated with the building.
Right.
It's in a particular location versus the... But it is sort of that.
It is. What we do on a weekly basis there, we wouldn't call the Lord's Day worship service. And so we do make a distinction in that we're... The way I say it is, RUF is the church going to the campus through an ordained minister back to the church. And so we are constantly pushing local church involvement. We happen to have a PCA church that's very close by. So we offer rides. That's one of the first things we did when I showed up on campus was I said, we're going to have a Bible study for students that are interested, and we're going to offer rides to Pacific Crossroads Church on Sunday mornings. So yeah, we are very much a church centered, based, focused ministry on the campus.
It seems interesting to me that, you know, universities and colleges were initiated by churches at the start, spun off of churches.
Mm-hmm.
And for a time they came to this place that churches weren't at, and now it seems to be going back.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to leave.
That is an interesting
place.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You get a lot of philosophical types of questioning from the students. I've had a college student comment to me that the atheists come on campus and they seem to win all the arguments.
Hmm.
You know, they seem to have all the answers from the perspective of atheism, and it just really knocks a lot of college students back on their heels philosophically. They say, yeah, why should I believe in God? You know, this all seems very plausible and reasonable, and you know what they're saying, and there are answers from a Christian perspective, but it
mm-hmm.
seems like so many Christians don't really seem to have the answers and the rejoinders to the atheist arguments.
Yes.
Do you see that a lot?
I do see that. I think I wouldn't say that the majority of the non-Christian representation at UCLA, which is the vast majority of the campus, I wouldn't say that the majority of them are staying out of the church, out of campus ministry, away from Christianity due to philosophical reasons. I'd say the majority is just due to, well, really, it's about the will. I mean, it's frankly, it's I want to do what I want to do. But there is, I mean, that is a big part, I think, and that's something of interest to me, you know, giving defenses for the faith. That's one of the most interesting topics to me. And so it becomes a part of our discussions in RUF. And actually, Melissa Merrill from this church, who's now just finished her sophomore year, she's been with us since the very beginning. She gave a testimony at a fundraiser we had a year ago. So it was the end of her freshman year. And I didn't know this until she shared it in the testimony, actually. But she said that that was one of the reasons RUF, that she stuck with what we were doing, is because she valued having answers to those difficult questions. And I value giving the students some of those answers. And so it is something that comes up. We have a Veritas Forum once a year at UCLA where they attempt to bring in a Christian who is also an expert in his or her field, and then a non-Christian or an agnostic atheist to come in and discuss, debate. And last year was wonderful. This year was pretty disappointing, actually. And so my fear was that after this year's forum, many students, Christian students, left going, okay, I still don't have any good answers to these questions. They weren't presented. And so that week in RUF, in our large group, the two nights later, I came ready to teach Jonah. We spent the entire time, though, responding to Veritas.
So Veritas is organized by the wider Christian community at UCLA.
Right, and it's not a Christian group. It is a forum. It's only a once a year thing. They have a small committee of people who put it together. This next year, I think in January, they're bringing out Ravi Zacharias. 2 years ago, so my first year at UCLA, they had John Lennox from Oxford. This year was just kind of a bit of a bust. But to answer your question, getting the pulse of the campus, there are strong, there's a strong voice from the skeptics and secularists on the campus. BASS is what, Bruin Alliance of Skeptics and Secularists, and the Bruin Atheists. They have a strong voice. They don't have strong participation, but they have a strong voice. And frankly, as I tell my students, their job is easier than ours because they, for the most part, they just pick on Christians, and all they have to do is look for apparent contradictions and bring up the problem of suffering, and that's really the extent of their job. A Christian who has to give defense of his or her faith is kind of expected to be an expert in areas of philosophy, history, their own faith, their own sacred texts, the sacred texts of other religions. I mean, we kind of are expected to know everything, and so it's a little unfair, but we do try to, yeah.
She was using the word sharing a philosophy of things, but I'm thinking, you know, I read this saying here just in this church a couple of weeks ago, that our society is dysfunctional. When we're thankful for something, we share a feeling. When we're shameful about something, we share a feeling. Well, that's nice. The question is, what do? What's your next action? You're looking for a job, what are you going to do first? You feel bad about having done something, what are you going to do? You know, and it seems like this notion of everybody sharing their feelings is so pervasive on these campuses that people are paralyzed. They don't know what to do next. They don't know a right versus a wrong, and this is what you should do. And that's what I'm thinking you're in a position to do. You know, that's where the church comes from. What's your next move?
That's it. That's an interesting observation. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at things.
Because for all that, you know, the bearded erudite, they're almost paralyzed in terms of making decisions. And that's if I understand.
Yeah, sounds right.
So what are some differences between UCLA campus and San Barbara?
That I've been able to discover in 2 years, I mean, I'm still very much learning my demographic. Well, UCLA is actually the most applied to school in the country. A lot of people don't know that, but more people apply to UCLA than any college in the nation, which means it's the school that denies the most people, really, if you think about it. And so in my experience, the students that I've met with, most of them are in the top three of their classes from high school. And so that to say, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, but academically, for many students, UCLA would be higher up on their choice than UCSB. UCSB has the stigma of being more of a party school. Jameson's got that to deal with and figure out. My impression is that if students aren't going to come to something that we're doing, it's more likely that it's a result of midterms and studying than partying. The school I went to, Florida State in Florida, which is when I was there, was the number one party school in the country. So I actually feel more comfortable working with UCSB students than UCLA students. I'm still learning a UCLA student, but they seem to, I mean, they really take their studies seriously. They either got in because they were already a student who took their studies seriously in middle school, high school, or because they went to a community college, junior college, or another UC school and transferred in because they proved, you know, they had to prove themselves there. And so, in my experience, they take it seriously. Now there's, you know, they have their fair share of partying, and the Greek fraternity sorority system on campus is fairly large. But that's the thing that my wife and I keep coming back to is, you know, we'll have our end of, you know, we have a party at our house the end of every quarter. And students will show up with flashcards. So I'm trying to kind of figure out where do I, you know, we're there for the university. We're in support of the student's primary vocation is as a student, not a part-time a missionary, you know, which a lot of the other campus ministries do. They'll burn students out very quickly. But at the same time, I do want to push back on this idolatry of grades and perfectionism and studying and not trusting God with that, but kind of trying to, you know, tight-fisted approach to studying. So I'm still kind of trying to figure that out. Yeah. I'm trying to think of other differences. I don't know how many transfers they have at UCSB, but UCLA is 40% transfer student, which makes starting a ministry, that's a difficulty because nearly half the campus is only there for 2 years. So that's a quicker turnover rate than a school like UCSB. I don't know what their transfer rate is, but I doubt it's that high because UCLA becomes more of a destination school than UCSB, I think, in undergrad.
Commuter population too, which I don't know
how yeah.
connect with commuters.
I don't think I've had one in RUF yet. I'm about to. There's a student transferring this fall who I've already connected with. He's going to be commuting from near, I can't remember what part of town he lives in L.A., but there are a lot of commuters. That being said, there aren't a lot of students who have cars. They kind of stay in the UCLA bubble world up there, which means we're constantly organizing rides, giving rides ourselves. It's a hard place to, like, if you're going to have a Bible study on the campus, there are a lot of things you got to go through to get to that. You've got to drive there. You've got to figure out a nightmare of parking, get onto the campus. Feels more inaccessible than my college experience.
I was talking about Jameson with is, you know, when I was in college, my whole world shrunk down to the campus. That was safe. I could get around. I knew it. I was in the middle of Seattle. And he offers, because of the party school atmosphere, it seems like the kids are kind of more willing to almost leave campus. They have more activities. There's more going on. But it sounds to me like you really do have kids who are like, in school, I'm coming here for, you know, 2 years or 4 years to get a degree, and that's it.
Yeah. Santa Barbara also has a little bit more of a campus feel of a town. I mean, it's when I go there, it seems like it's everyone there is either under 20 or over 50. And there's not a... What's that? Yeah, L.A.'s frightening. I mean, as soon as you step off the campus, you're in Westwood, a neighborhood. And as soon as you step out of there, you're in a different neighborhood. Traffic, it's just kind of... So they kind of have a little enclave of safety. Yeah, that it doesn't come up too much, but if we do beach trips, when we do service projects, yeah, I mean, we're going to places that they have no idea how to get to. So they never go. Yeah, right, but they have their flashcards. Yeah. Yes, sir?
In the 70s, 76 or so, I transferred down there from State College here, and I was a good B student, but I wouldn't categorize myself as top 3%. And I realized things have gotten more competitive. But I always used to wonder, those people who were admitted as freshmen, and somehow somebody left to leave a space for me, where did they go? I think I know where one of them went, but what is it? Just I know when I went down there from this school at 3,000 to 30,000 down there, it looked like the Roman Legion when we lined up for diplomas. You know, I didn't know that many people were on the campus.
Yeah.
But it was a much bigger place, but did people just get lost down there? I wonder if they have connections to, I don't know.
It is a big place. Very big place. Yeah. Feels big. Geographically, it doesn't feel too large, but the campus, but feels like there's a lot of students. As far as students transferring in, are they filling a spot? I don't know that anyone's transferring out. I think they just factor in admissions every year. What percentage is going to be transfer students? I don't know how they do that, but I don't.
Does that mean the freshman class is smaller than the junior and senior class?
I guess mathematically or logically that would have to be the case every year, that when you get to be a junior, you're going to be joining a herd coming from another place. Yeah, because I think once you're at UCLA, I can't imagine where they're transferring to. I don't know where they could transfer to after 2 years. Because if you're at UCLA, you applied to Stanford, likely, and didn't get into Stanford, or you'd probably be there, which means I don't think you get in. And 2 years later, I don't think that's going to make a huge difference. So I don't know where. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of transferring out. So just a mass influx of people. We have a lot of transfers in our group, and some just graduated, and they feel like they've been at UCLA for a day, 2 weeks. I mean, it goes by 2 years. Now I know how fast that goes by on the campus.
I mean, I knew the dorm, I knew the cafeteria, and I knew the library and classes, and that was it.
Yeah.
I never even went to the beach.
Yeah. You're there to get your stuff done. Yeah.
So with the local church, what's your interaction with them? And do you do things with them? Are you involved with their staff?
Yeah, I'm a little bit more, well, kind of like Jameson, because Pacific Crossroads is the closest PCA church to the campus by far, and our largest supporter of a church by far. And really, they were the ones recruiting someone to do this job. I'm like Jameson. I'm almost seen by the church as staff. In fact, I'm on the website as campus minister or college minister under pastoral staff. So. For sake of confusion, it's usually presented as Joe's one of the pastors here. I do go to staff meeting, but not because I'm required to, more because I want to. And I probably lead the worship service as far as some of the liturgical elements, announcements, Lord's Supper, those kind of things, about once a month, sometimes twice a month. And I preach there maybe three times a year. So as their pastoral staff's growing, I'm further down the line on the bench of people to get in the game for preaching. But the church kind of doesn't know what to do with me. Some of the people in the church don't quite. They see, okay, he leads our campus ministry at UCLA. But why is it called RUF and not Pacific Crossroads Campus Ministry? So that kind of gets, a little confusing. Yeah, I'd say, last year, the vast majority of our students that were with us the first year went to Pacific Crossroads, at least on a semi-regular basis. Some of them went to Reality LA, which a lot of Christian students at UCLA go to. And so this year, what I want to do is, because RUF is a ministry for Presbyterian students, but not only. So I make it clear our connection to Pacific Crossroads, but then I also push their involvement in a local church. And so if they want to go to Vintage Church, which is right there in Westwood, and it's a gospel-centered church, the guy's a Reformed guy, but it's an Anglican Mission in America church, not a PCA church. Like, I'm not going to, I'm not going to get angry about some students in RUF going to a good gospel-centered church. But they know our strong connection to Pacific Crossroads, and that the majority, over half of the students in RUF, when they go on a Sunday morning, they go to Crossroads. And so, I can't get them to go every Sunday morning, but when they go, a lot of them go there. Yeah. Well, for one-on-ones, I think it's very beneficial, yeah. And I probably, some weeks I'll have 10 one-on-ones. Some weeks I'll have 2. And so it depends. But I'd say I average probably 5 to six one-on-ones with students per week. Depends on the student. Yeah, it's if the student's coming seeking me out to meet, then usually that means he or she has a question or a struggle, and so then we're going to kind of start there. If it's a student, like one-on-ones I've had with non-Christians are more sent, like we're opening up the Gospel of John and we're talking about the Bible, and I'm usually letting them ask zany, crazy questions they have about the Bible and Christianity, so then it looks like that. So it really is a case by case. There are some students who we have kind of a regular weekly meeting. There are others that I meet with maybe twice a quarter. There are some that I've had to hunt down to get two meetings this school year. So it really depends. Early on, it's a lot of finding out who they are, letting them be able to talk, you know, about where they come from, what's their church background, what do they find helpful about RUF, where could we be better in our relating to a college student. So I'll ask them questions on, hey, help us connect with you better. How are you connecting in the community of RUF? And then for some students, it's, they're kind of my leaders, so then it's talking about how are you pouring into younger students? How are you, have you seen Jordan lately? Where is he? like, track him down, those kind of things. So, Jeff.
You mentioned Reality Church. Do you have any students from that church attending your studies?
We do. Some of them have switched to Pacific Crossroads within the past year. But early on, we probably had five or six who regularly went to Reality, and I'd say the four of those now regularly attend Pacific Crossroads.
And when Dave Carson was there in L.A. at Reality,
I didn't hear that first part?
Carson.
Oh, yeah, he came and spoke there, yeah.
Was that before your time?
That was right after I'd moved here,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
at their Reality up there? Okay. Yeah. From what I've heard, I've listened to a little bit of Tim Chaddick's preaching. He's not Presbyterian, but soteriologically he's Reformed. And so that's still a better option than some other places where they could be hearing the Bible taught. So there are maybe a couple of churches that if I heard students were going there, I would strongly encourage them not to in L.A. because I don't think Jesus is being taught. But Reality wouldn't be one of those, at least till I hear something really crazy.
CDA Carson there for, I don't know, it was like 5, 6, 7 Syrian messages.
Yeah, right. And he's pretty solid, D.A. Carson. So that gives them some credibility for sure. Yeah.
Ministry challenges. UCLA is a large campus. Population. So how do you, that sounds simple. Gee, we just have to find 10 people out of 30,000. How do you, what are you doing each year now?
Well, this coming year will be the first year that we'll have kind of an official leadership core group team of students that we're calling our servant team, I think. So that I wanted to have this past year, but just, it feels like I can get UCLA students to attend two things in a week. And as soon as I kind of get to three or four, so next year we're gonna try that. We had student leaders this year, but they weren't official. We just, kind of knew what their roles were and things I could count on them to do. So we're going to do that. We're going to, I'm going to disband our girls small group and guys small group and restructure small groups, make them all co-ed, except for we'll probably do a guys accountability group that will be of a different nature than the rest of our Bible studies. I'm going to try and establish small group Bible studies based on year location on campus, like dorm areas, apartments, and do them co-ed. So that we're changing. We're going to continue with our Thursday night format. This past quarter was the first time we introduced music into our Thursday night large group. And so I'm undecided. I know we will start our first week or two of fall with music. I haven't decided whether or not this is a weekly thing, because with our size, when we get to the middle of the quarter, you know, music for college students, the more, the less awkward. The more people there, the less awkward for them. And so so we haven't moved to doing it every week, but we have kind of transitioned to saying this is a part of what we want to do. Worship, this is what worship is, this is why we sing to God. So now it's not at least a foreign thing, it's something they've done, and we're going to do more of. As far as, I mean, the biggest time for gathering is the first 2 weeks of every school year.
And how are you doing that?
We will be, I mean, other than basic signage, I mean, we have our sign on campus. The first 0 week when all the students are checking out groups, we actually, through a lottery system, we have a big banner that hangs over Bruin Walk for 0 week. So we'll have more exposure than we've ever had. We'll have multiple tables set up on campus in different locations with students at them, volunteers that still look like students that I'll grab from the church to wear an RUF t-shirt. And we'll hand out flyers, we'll tell people what we're doing, and then all our returning students will say, you know, hit the streets, bring your friends out to this first meeting, and
so
go from there.
So you've done tables in the past. A student comes up to a table. Why give us a typical, I'm at a table, how does that student make a connection with you ultimately?
I've had a variety of experiences with that. You'll have some students who they are coming to UCLA to find a Christian ministry, and so you are one of many that they're going to look at. And that student wants to know kind of, hey, what's the difference in you and these other groups? What's your size? You know, what are you offering? And then you'll have some students who come to the table who aren't Christians and want to know what we're about. And so some of those I actually will get to have more lengthy conversations with, because some of the Christian students, they're, okay, we got your flyer, we're on to see what these guys have. And some of the non-Christian students will actually, you know, they're more curious about, so what is this that you're doing? What does your name mean? Christian students ask that too, because
sure.
RUF is still such a foreign thing. But so they'll ask who we are, what's Reformed mean, and I've got to figure out a way to explain that in 3 minutes.
I think Christy said something like, the top one was, does this have anything to do with pets?
Or are you
That's good. Yeah.
Animal rescue.
Yeah.
It may be, you know, let's talk about them.
Or are you a Jewish ministry?
Okay, sure. You bet.
Yeah, so we actually, in our just the Reformed Jew kind of, so we actually, on some of our flyers, pamphlet signs, it will say RUF Christian Fellowship.
Sure.
Just to,
yeah,
you know, so that it's more known. So, yeah.
I used to know this man that said, you know, the problem with a heresy is one day it'll hurt somebody. And, or otherwise you're living like the hard way as you practice your faith. And I've always thought, you know, albeit the Reformed churches are often small in number, but the nature of the theology is it's God's theology, I assume, presume, and it's efficient. In other words, for hard-charging people, which I think as Jameson was saying when he was here, you're participating in the world, but you're not of the world, and you're coming at things from underneath.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you may be a lawyer, you might be an athlete, but you're going after these things in the world, but you're a Christian. And I think our theology lends itself to great efficiency as you do those things. And it's not accidental that somebody would become in the Reformed Church versus other things. The harder you push for these things, the more you're looking for efficiencies as well as salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And good theology is a blessed thing, here and now.
Yeah.
You know, the more capable you are, I think it becomes apparent.
Yeah.
To many of these young people and older people as well.
For sure. That's definitely a distinctive of our ministry. I'm sure Jameson would say the same thing, is that we hear from our students, we learn the Bible here.
See,
we learn theology here.
I can believe there's people that are truly saved in the Roman Catholic Church, but it must be an awkward life to live. You know, you're doing all of these activities,
mm-hmm.
superfluous to what...
Right.
I won't judge you for it, but I could wonder why you do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, and ideally, my kids won't be going to a secular campus. But in what ways can we? Would you have any ideas on ways to prepare kids, Christian kids, for a secular campus?
I mean, as my kids are young, that's a question that every now and then pops into my head. I mean, other than being a godly parent and raising them, you know, learning the Bible, learning theology, learning defenses of the faith. I don't know what all you can do. I mean, because they go off to college and you don't know. They have plenty of opportunities to connect with campus ministries. They are there. Those opportunities are there. They're ready to receive a student coming in who's a Christian. However, no one can control, I mean, no one can force them to go. And we had a couple students this year who kind of fell off and I can't track down anymore. Stopped showing up things. And all I can do is continue to pursue, to continue to let them know. I'm not nervous about being annoying to students who are starting to, if they're leaving and choosing another campus ministry, you know, God be with them. But if they're not going anywhere and they're going to get texts from me on a regular basis and emails and phone calls, I'm okay with being the guy that when they graduate, this pastor wouldn't leave me alone. I'm okay with being that guy. And I think as a parent, I'm okay with being that kind of parent, although I don't know anything about it yet because my oldest is 4. You know, I think you... It's,
can I just ask those questions?
Yeah.
I think what you're doing is so important because I think every kid, when they reach those college years, they have to own it. You know, for the first time, mommy and daddy are not sitting there making you go to church every Sunday morning, making you, you know, you have to decide, is this who I am, or am I going to just walk away from all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Just as a side note, as one of the former agnostic, I guess the best way to describe what I was, who was bugged by a pastor, and that's the reason that I'm sitting here today. Congratulations, you're doing the right thing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Send my kids down there, harp on them, please.
Yeah, I will. Well, I have a responsibility to kids from PCA churches in a different way. That, yeah, so they'll get me knocking on their dorm door. What's that?
Your parents call you and say, check on my kid, call my kid.
I would welcome that. I don't get as much of that as I would like. Yeah.
No student has ever given his contact information.
Yeah. I don't get that enough. In fact, what I'll get is I'll have parents kind of send me an email that will it would almost be like a veiled kind of accusation that I'm responsible, that their students haven't been attending. Sometimes that'll show up, and I'll have to tell them, you know, I'm available to meet weekly with you. I mean, the size of our group, I can still bi-weekly. You know, if everybody wanted to meet with me one-on-one, it'd probably have to be bi-weekly. But I'm available to meet. We have students into our home. Like, we are here, and we will pursue your son and daughter. But ultimately, it will be down to them to show up to stuff. So. It is. That's a good assumption. Yeah. Yeah, I've stolen their musicians already, and we'll continue to do that.
How about helping to follow up? Like you mentioned, if everyone wanted to see a 2-week list.
Well, that volunteers doing that kind of thing. This year we had one, and she was, I wished I could have paid her because she was basically a non paid intern, part time. She probably spent 8 hours a week or so. She led the girls' small group. She would meet one-on-one periodically with girls in the group because my wife would do those things if she was more available to do those things. But with three young kids at home, it's not she's not as available. So, but she's been the Erin is her name. She's been the only volunteer kind of doing that level of ministry. In the fall, volunteers that I'll have come will be people that I've become friends with at the church, that will come and help gather names and contacts on campus. I'll give them the spiel on how they explain what we are as a ministry. It's just so that they can connect with more students that first week than I can. But as far as following up, that'll probably be for obviously me, but also my student leaders. I'll have them do some follow-up in the fall. I actually think that's more effective sometimes than me following up, is them getting a call from a sophomore or junior who's saying, hey, met you, come to RUF, love to have you come check out our group. So yeah.
How about personal challenges?
So, me personally, not necessarily ministry related.
We're praying for you.
Yeah.
So, okay. What do we pray for?
Gas
mileage on your vehicle.
Okay. that's not too bad. I don't think I put too many miles on it the past couple of years. Because we live fairly close to campus. So,
where do you live?
We live in just south of Westwood. So, we're 2.5 miles south of campus. Personally, I would say the thing that takes the biggest toll on my family is my contentment or frustrations with the ministry. And so learning how to, because I don't have a team, it's me, so to process the good or the bad day ends up being my wife. And I'm getting smarter about that, but that, you know, if I'm feeling discouraged, that can really weigh on her because she agreed to move our whole family across the country for this. So she would like to hear me happy most of the time. And so, learning how to, I mean, the umbrella over all of that is just trusting that God's at work, you know, even when we, seventh week of a quarter, our, you know, attendance just drops off. Trusting it's going to come back. We're seventh week. It always happens this week. But, you know, emotionally, I don't always kind of respond that way. So,
just before finals?
Yeah, it's something about that week, like week 6 and 7, that they've already blown it on some of their earlier midterms in the quarter. So now they have their second round of midterms. They've really got to get serious. And so that's when it kicks in. And then usually 8th and 9th week, they come back And we do our last large group every quarter, 9th week. We don't do it 10th week. We do our party 10th week. We do our last large group 9th week so that we end on a high note. Because 10th week, right before exams, just for momentum of ministry, we stop there. We still do our small groups 10th week, but large group stops. And then we do a big party for any students who can get away from their studies during 10th week. So,
yeah. UCLA, I mean, not for everybody doesn't realize, UCLA is on a quarter system, so it's 10 weeks, 3 quarters.
Yeah, so 10 in the fall.
Rapid pace.
Yeah.
Finals. So 3 finals, 3 sets of finals every year.
Fall feels way too short.
Yeah.
Then you come back after Christmas and it's 10 weeks, spring break, 10 weeks. So it's a long run that we just finished from January of ministry. Yeah.
Are you seeing opportunities gearing up for education of your kids in that environment? In other words, I've had some experience teaching, and I always felt calm and greedy, but I always felt like I could push harder with the kids I'm working with if I knew my kids sufficiently taken care of were better. In other words, and I think you mentioned your daughter is age 4.
My son, oldest, is 4. She's daughter's 2.5, and then we got a youngest who's 4
so
weeks.
My son is 20. You're getting ready for a big change. I mean, this is a different section of your life. You'll see it as they go through grade school and then high school. It's opportunities, whatever you want to call them, challenges.
Yeah.
But that's the way I felt as an instructor, as a teacher, as somebody working with the education of other people's kids. I always like to know that my kids.
Anyway,
you're in the city, and I know that, like public schools, there can be private schools on public funds, but that often depends on living in a certain area, and there can be public schools which are pretty coarse.
We live, we live, the neighborhood in which we live is zoned for the best charter school in Los Angeles. But we're still nervous about that. So the plan right now is my wife is going to homeschool until she can't stand it anymore. We would like to do, but you know, we're ignorant of these things. Oldest is 4. But our plan right now would be homeschool through elementary school, private Christian school, if at that point in our lives we can afford it, for middle school, and then public high school. And that's just our plan. People do it. I've done it a variety of different ways. And,
Let me talk about that.
Sure. Yeah. I knew as soon as I said it, there are people in this room who are going to have strong opinions about it. But part of the reason we want to do that is because of the questions that have been asked about how do you prepare them for if they go off to a public university. I would rather them, my personal opinion would be to have my kids in public high school while they're still under my roof. We can deal with some of those things then if then they're going to go off to a public university. But again, this is all coming from someone who knows nothing about parenting teenagers. So this is our opinion and best guess right now.
For your age, I was dead set against homeschooling of any kind. My kids were going to go to public school because that's what they do with it. So it's amazing how things can change.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. No.
How are we doing time-wise? Is somebody? What time?
It is 10:30.
All right. So we're at the end here. But I'll ask you one last question. And you know, you were recruited to UCLA, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how would you characterize UCLA? You've been there 2 years now. Obviously, there's a field that's white under harvest. But some are more closed than others. How would you line UCLA up?
With other
southern campuses?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
RUF, you know, you go to the RUF large meetings, and we have 150 in return away.
How I would characterize...
It might be where you're at, too, on this process.
Right now, I'd say... my impression of UCLA is it's no more debauched than a Florida State. It's not like there's more sin because we're in LA. It's It is more secular in thought and philosophy, sure. But even still, I went to a college with plenty of people who were either walking away from their faith or had at some point. I'd say the big difference with RUF and growth is, yeah, I mean, you go to a school in the South and you hang up a sign that RUF is there, and you're going to have a large group that first week. You're going to have 50 kids. And that is, I don't think that's because necessarily that particular public school has a bigger Christian presence, as I think it has a bigger PCA presence.
Right.
Our difficulty starting a ministry at UCLA has more to do with selling a brand that is unknown than than dealing with secularism. Evangelism, building a group is one thing. Evangelism is kind of a different thing. We're building a group primarily of Christians, then with non-Christians coming in, sprinkling in, and then trying to equip those Christians to do evangelism and invite. But the building of a group, you have to count on Christians coming in the fall. You know, you're not going to build a group of 30 skeptics in your Christian ministry, right? And so that's what makes... Right. So that's what makes RUF difficult at UCLA, and I'm sure it's the same. The guy at Berkeley, it sounds almost the exact same. There's a ton of non-Christians, but there's also a ton of Christian ministries, and RUF is one of the ones that no one knows about. And so, yeah.
And so the challenge in particular is for these men who are in this role, I mean, that's they're like the pioneer. That's a particular challenge. Bill, if you'll pray for Joe.
Father, we praise your name, and we thank you for providing ministries in a variety of ways that can reach people in their lives, critical times in their lives. And we thank you for this fellow this morning as he shares what he's involved in, as he shares different details and opportunities. And we just pray that you would provide their ministry and fellowship with growth in numbers, spiritual growth that we could see and be thankful for. And we just pray for your guidance in all things. Amen.
Amen.